My name is Luther Peterson. I'm a parish pastor in Minneapolis. We're studying the book of Ecclesiastes, and today we're looking at the person who has really become very discouraged about trying to do anything about peace and justice issues. The person who is rather just running into all kinds of problems, and people don't appreciate what you're doing, and you're not seeing any results, and you wonder if it's worth it to live a just life, or to live an honest and ethical life, or to even crusade about peace and justice issues, let alone crusade for peace and justice issues. Let's begin with a word of prayer. Oh God, we thank you for this beautiful new day and for the opportunities that we have again today. We pray that you will guide us and make us open to the many new possibilities that are with us today. Also open our hearts and minds to hear your word and to grow in faith and life. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Before we continue with this particular one, I'd just like to say something that I thought of yesterday. I thought, well, it's possible there's a misunderstanding that could come up as we study this book. There's always the danger that we may get the feeling that this negative attitude that we're dealing with in the book of Ecclesiastes is something that none of us want to ever be caught dead with. And that's inferior to having this wonderful, possible, wonderful, cheerful, sunny attitude that we all want to have. We want to be always positive and never feel negative. That isn't the way that's the most helpful way to deal with this. And that's why I wanted to share something again out of A Cry of Absence, this book by Martin Marty, which is not in the bookstore anymore. But you can get it someplace later on. It's Reflections for the Winter of the Heart. Martin Marty contrasts the winter of the heart with the summer of the heart. Martin Marty says that, I think you probably can guess what those two things mean. The winter of the heart is a person who's down and discouraged about something. Life has not been good to you in some ways, or your attitude is bad, or it's down, or whatever. And and on the other hand, the summer of the heart is when you feel good and you feel positive, and you're just very up. The danger, Martin Marty says, is that we assume that we are a better Christian if we have the summer attitude. A higher percentage of the time. If we're 99% summer and 1% winter, or maybe 100% summer and 0% winter, then we are really a good Christian. Then we really have arrived. Now, that's a misunderstanding, he says, and is not the way it is. So let me just share about a page of what he says here that I think can be very helpful, and it ties in with what we're doing with Ecclesiastes. Let there be then, the responsive believer pleads, no war between the spiritual styles, but only a peaceful coexistence. Rather than have one version force the other out, can they not complement each other? Each can appeal to a company of people making its pilgrimage. Each style, for that matter, can bring some gifts to people of the other style. Of course, you may have one style predominate in your life. That's fine. But he says, don't discount the other side. There will almost inevitably be moments in the life of the summery sorts, the person that's always cheerful, always smiling, when the wintry style will speak with clarity and bracing purpose. There will also be moments in the life of the wintry sorts, and there are people that are negative most of the time, when the sunny style will bathe the corners of their hearts with unanticipated but welcomed warmth. No logical, psychological, biblical, or traditional reasons exist to force the two to exclude each other. But there are reasons on all of these of those grounds for the believing community and personal seekers today to discover or to rediscover the wintry sort, It merits notice and nurture after an epoch of neglect. To call for two styles and to find impetus for the wintry sort of search demands boldness. It receives so little attention that anyone who defends it may well express the old reformer's anxiety. Am I alone right? And is the whole church wrong? Why in our era, and listen to this now, why in our era does the Christian public relations industry, speak only of one style? You know, be happy, be up. Is the wintry kind to be forgotten after its honored place for centuries? Has something happened in human evolution to screen out the factors that once saw the spirituality of the wintry heart to be so natural and so common? And then finally, worse, have market conditions led the advertisers to concentrate on what in slang is known as the quick fix in matters of the spirit? Okay, I just thought that it really ties in what we're talking about, because there's a danger. There's a danger in thinking that our main purpose here is to get all of us to the point where we are 100% sunshine. That is not true. That just is not even desirable. But anyhow, let's go on. Let's get on to the actual study here. Just by way of prelude, let's take turns reading now. These are the Bible passages which talk about, on this left, on the left side, have to express the disillusionment about attempting to live a just life. And let's read those first. We'll start with that side. Ecclesiastes 3, 16 through 21. Ecclesiastes 3, 16 through 21. And let's see, we'll start with the front row, just like we often do here. Let's start here and just read one verse, okay?
Okay.
And let's just pass it along right around. Or if you don't want to read, just say, I pass.
Okay. Moreover, I saw under the sun that in the place of justice, even there was wickedness. And in the places of righteousness, even there was wickedness. I said in my heart, God will judge the righteous and the wicked, for he has appointed a time for every matter and for every work.
I said in my heart with regard to the sons of men, that God was testing them to show them that they are but beasts.
For that which befalls the sons of men befalleth beasts. Even one thing befalleth them, as the one dieth, so dieth the other. Yea, they have all one breath, so that a man hath no preeminence above a beast, for all is vanity.
For all go to one place, all are from the dust, and all return to the dust again.
Who knows if the spirit of man rises upward, and if the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth.
Okay, now we skip to chapter 4, verse 1 through 3. Chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. Let's continue on.
Again, I saw all the oppressions that are practiced under the sun, and behold, the tears of the oppressed, and they had no one to comfort them. On the side of their oppressors, there was power, and there was no one to comfort them.
And I thought the dead who are already dead were fortunate than the living who are still alive.
You're better than both is he who has not yet been, and has not seen the evil deeds that are done under the sun.
Okay, thank you. And now we read chapter 5, verse 8.
If you see in the province the poor oppressed, and justice and right violently taken away, do not be amazed at the matter, for the high official is watched by a higher, and there are yet higher ones over them.
Okay. Now, chapter 8, verses 9 and 10, or excuse me, chapter 8, verses 10 and 11.
And then I saw the wicked buried. They used to go in and out of the holy place, and were praised in the city where they had done such things. This also is vanity.
Okay, verse 11, next. Oh, let's go here, yeah.
Because sentence against an evil deed is not executed speedily, the heart of the sons of men is fully set to do evil.
Okay, thank you. And then verse 14.
There is a vanity which is done upon the earth, that there be just men unto whom it happeneth according to the work of the wicked. Again, that there be wicked men to whom it happeneth according to the work of the righteous.
Okay.
I said that this also is vanity.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. And then finally, chapter 9, verses 1 through 3.
But all of this I have laid to heart, examining it all, how the righteous and the wise and their deeds are in the hand of God, whether it is love or hate, man does not know. Everything before them is vanity, since.
Okay, that's the end of that one. Okay, then the next.
Since one fate comes to all, to the righteous and the wicked, to the good and evil, to the clean and the unclean, to him who sacrifices and him who does not sacrifice. As is the good man, so is the sinner. As he who swears is he who shuns an oath.
Okay, and then finally, verse 3.
This is an evil thing among all things that are done under the sun, that there is one event unto all. Yea, also the hearts of the sons of men is full of evil, and madness is in their heart while they live, and after that they go to the dead.
Okay, thank you. How many of you would say that the preacher is overly idealistic? No, not exactly. Rather cynical, would you say, about whether it's worth it to be occupied with ethics and living rightly and issues of peace and justice? How many of you have ever become discouraged about being a good person? How many of you have ever become really burned out and discouraged about being involved in peace and justice issues? Well, so maybe you're in a position where you can understand where Ecclesiastes or the preacher or Koheleth or whatever you call it is coming from. What is it that's wrong? Is he saying here? What disappointments has he come up with? Just anybody?
Life is not fair.
Life is not fair. Okay. Well, what else?
There doesn't seem to be a relationship between one's goodness and one's reward.
Okay. You be good or bad, you get often the same results. Other things why the author is rather discouraged about peace and justice.
He says there's no difference between a man and an animal. You both live and you both die.
Okay. All right. Both, whether you're man or animal, let alone good or bad person, you all go to the same place, all die. Other reasons why the author here is discouraged.
Vanity seems to be the motivation for everything.
Okay, the emptiness. As we talked about on Monday, for some of you that were here, vanity is the Hebrew picture of like the mist that's on your bathroom mirror after you've taken a shower. It doesn't stay there very long. That's about how permanent many of the so-called good things and the worthwhile things seem to the author. They just slip away. You just can't get a handle on the good things of life. Okay, other reasons why the author lists that it just doesn't seem worth it anymore. Yes.
Well, those that were oppressed didn't have any comforter. And he says the dead are better off than they, and then even if they hadn't been born at all, they'd been better off.
Yeah, better. Better off you hadn't even been born, okay? All right. That's cynical, all right. Yes?
It feels like no matter how hard you work, sometimes the bad guys win anyway.
Okay. No matter how hard you work, bad guys sometimes win anyway. Yes?
Wasn't it Leo Durocher, whose birthday is up there, and said, nice guys finish last?
There's a little slogan from Leo, right. Okay. Nice guys finish last. Others? All things come alike to all. Okay, all right. And so all kinds of, yes. Did you have?
It seems to be more stressing all the results and what's going rather than taking any enjoyment in the day-to-day things that are going on.
Yeah, in these verses that we're looking at, we're looking at the negative ones first. Yeah, right. Okay. Okay, any other reasons why? Did you uncover any other reasons why he's so discouraged from these verses that we read? The power is often on the side of what? Of who? The oppressor. He talks about oppressors. That's where the power lies. And instead of on the people, on the side of the people who are what? Concerned about justice, love, caring, and those things. Any other reasons that you see? Okay.
He sees wickedness in the places of justice as well as places of righteousness.
Ah, wickedness. He sees wickedness in the places of justice as well as other places. Okay. Well, let's take a look then. Since the same author has other things to say, let's see what the author says on a more positive note. Let's read, first of all, from chapter 5, verses 18 through 20. I suppose that particular one would be good for us to read every day this week. And there are a whole lot of those like that. And this one doesn't deal specifically with justice issues, but it's still a good one for us to read. 5, 18 through 20. Let's see, where were we here in our reading process? Over here? Okay.
Behold, what I have seen to be good and to be fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil which this one toils under the sun, the few days of his life, which God has given him. For this is his lot.
Okay.
Every man also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and to find enjoyment in his toil, this is a gift of God.
Okay.
For he will not much remember the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart.
Okay, thank you. Now, let's read them good and loud now so people can hear you. Chapter 8, verses 12 and 13.
The sinner does not do a hundred times, but prolongs his life. Yet I know that it will be well with those who fear God, because they fear before him.
Okay, it does. It will be well with those who fear God. Okay, and then let's go over here. Would you want to take verse 13?
But it shall not be well with the wicked. Neither shall it be prolonged his day, which are as shadows, because he feareth not before God.
Okay, and then 12, verses 13 and 14. You want to read verse 13? 12, 13. Yeah, 12, chapter 12, verse 13. Where this is the conclusion to the book. This is how he wraps it up.
Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of man.
Okay, and then, let's see, the third row in the back, just the last verse of the book.
For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil.
Now, does this seem contradictory to you? No? Why not? Anybody like to say, well, yeah, just say that. Why don't you think so? Why don't you think this is contradictory? Anybody? God is still in control. The last word is that God is still in control. It still pays to live a just life. Does he say why it's okay to continue to pursue ethics and justice and peace and those things? Anybody? It's your duty and what?
He does it either bad or good. If you're bad, you still, it says here, for whether good or bad, in every secret thing.
We will be judged. Okay, that there will be a final judgment. Okay, there's a final judgment coming. Is it only that someday we're going to, get to that place in the sky and then we're going to get what we deserve? Is that the only reason, though, do you see here, or what?
That isn't a reason.
That isn't a reason, okay. Want to say some more about that?
Going up to that place in the sky you referred to because of what Christ did on the cross.
Okay.
This is all having, we do this work one way or the other because of Christ in our heart.
Okay. Very good. That's a good New Testament perspective. We want to keep that perspective in mind. And the author of Ecclesiastes, of course, does not have that long view necessarily in mind, because the author of Ecclesiastes, in those days, they did not have in their conscious minds any kind of a life after death. Judgment or death or resurrection and those kinds of things, second kind of thing like heaven that we talk about. So everything that he says here really has to be, really has to refer to the fact that the judgment is happening now. It's in this life. There's a reason in this life to live justly. Any other things that you noticed in these passages?
Keeping to yourself. A lot of people will say, why should I join the church? I do things that aren't necessarily good, and I don't reap any destruction from it.
Okay.
You know, I live my life, and you live yours, and I don't have to worry about anybody else.
Okay.
And they seem to be doing all right.
Yeah, this is the... And this is what's observed by the preacher here. Okay? Any other comments on what we've read so far? Okay. Before we read this one, with another New Testament perspective, just want to look at these questions. We're going to break into small groups for about 12 minutes and work on these questions, and we'll come back together and report, and then we'll try to wrap it up after that. But keep these questions in mind. I should have read them earlier. Number one, try to remember the last time you felt like saying, what's the use of working for peace and justice? In fact, the questions are a little more detailed. I couldn't get them all on the board. The questions are this. Try to remember the last time you felt like lowering your expectations in regard to working for peace and justice. When you felt like saying, what's the use? Crime and corruption have always been a part of society. Who am I to think I could do anything about it? And then how did you deal with yourself at that point where you felt that way? Think of a situation. Think of a time. Take some time to really think of how you felt at some time when you were discouraged about something, some particular thing. And then how did you deal with yourself at that point? And then how would you deal with your attitude, your own attitude, next time this discouragement comes along, as it most certainly will? Okay, the second question, which is harder to read, the red doesn't come through. What are you doing this year to live more justly, to be less of an oppressor, to become a little less a part of an oppressive society? And then the third question, if you were poor, and that is like third world person, and seeing the great power of the wealthy and how they're trotting you underfoot, how would you interpret these Bible passages differently than we do, who are fairly comfortable? And then finally, if you'd like, write a proverb. I especially want you to get through the first two, but if you can get on to the third and fourth. Okay, now let's read Matthew 25, 31 to 46. There are so many Bible passages in the New Testament we could have chosen. The Gospel of Luke is full of them. But let's just read this one, Matthew 25. It's a parable, 31 through 46. Would one of you read the whole thing, please? Just go ahead and read, whoever finds it first.
When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations, and he will separate them one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will place the sheep at his right hand, but the goats at the left. Then the king will say to those on his right hand, come, O blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see thee hungry and feed thee, or thirsty and give thee drink? And when did we see a stranger and welcome thee, or naked and clothe going to receive his sick or in prison and visit thee? And the king will answer him, truly, I say to you, as you did it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. And he will say to those at his left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal fire, prepared for the devil and his angels.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to work. 4 or 5 in a group. Appoint a recorder, and the recorder can either write on this paper or just on a little piece of a note paper, or just unless you have a memory that doesn't forget anything. Someone, secondly, who's an encourager, who keeps the conversation going and gets everybody to talk. And thirdly, maybe a timekeeper. We're going to go about 12 minutes and work on these issues. And I'm going to read them again now as you move into your groups. Or get into your groups first, and then I'm going to read them again.
That's the last important verse there. I apologize.
Oh, read it. Go ahead and read it.
These are important follow-up. I think 42. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink.
Oh, yes.
I was a stranger, and you did not
of course.
Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick, and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they also will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister to thee? Then he will answer them, truly I say to you, as you did it not to one of the least of these, you did it not to me. And they will go away into eternal punishment with the righteous and into eternal life.
Okay, thank you very much. Parable of the sheep and the goats. Now, I'm going to read these questions again, and I want you to, because they're kind of hard to see from a distance. I'll summarize them by what's on the board here. Groups of 4 or 5. 5 at the most. Anyway, try to remember the last time you felt like saying, I'll wait till you get into your groups. Okay. Okay. Everybody kind of settled in someplace. All right, let me read them again, okay? Just hold it. Okay, number one, try to remember the last time, a specific instance, when you felt like saying, what's the use of working for peace and justice? How did you deal with yourself at that point, and how would you do it next time? Secondly, what are you doing this year, you, not somebody else, what are you doing this year to live more justly, to be less a part of an oppressive society? And then the third ones, if you get to those, you can come up and look at them. Okay, go ahead. We can stop the tape now for a while. One of those verses in the first column would have been a good one to probably start with. How many of you have ever been at a funeral where you saw the, quote, wicked buried, and you heard a sermon that didn't quite fit the corpse? A little bit. So the widow probably had to go up and take a look and see if it was the right guy.
Or, <an action. laughs>
yeah, it reminds me of the story about the preacher turned undertaker who said, somebody asked him why he left the clergy kind of work and became an undertaker, mortician. He said, well, I used to try to straighten people out, but they got crooked again. Now when I straighten them out, they stay straight. That's bad, I know. All right, now the first two questions and the ones you dealt with mostly were the kind of questions that try to keep the focus on yourself. We intellectualize these things so much, we want to escape by going off on a little head trip and saying, well, what are some good ideas about all this? But these are attempting to try to get us to search our own souls and say, where are we at? And so I suppose, hopefully you shared with each other, at least some of you, where you were at and some of your struggles. And let's share some of those now with the rest of us. Try to remember the last time you felt like saying, what's the use of working for peace and justice? How did you deal with yourself at this point? How about up in the balcony? Did we have any kinds of sharing on that on that feeling, on that thought from up there? Anybody?
Lots of talk up there.
Lots of talk?
Lots of talk. All of us have felt the discouragement.
Okay. All of you have felt the discouragement. Okay. And how did anyone, or give some samplings of how somebody might have dealt with their feelings at that time? Anybody? And maybe if you want the person who, maybe the recorder wants to simply point to person who really shared something kind of gutsy to share with the rest of us. Well, however you want to do it. Anybody?
My expression of working for justice in one case is just to be a clergy in the parish or wherever I'm invited to do that, to allow people to experience women clergy at work. And when I get discouraged by resistance and other kinds of feelings on people's parts, I'm reminded by a friend of mine that I'm only called to plant the seed. I'm only called to show up.
Okay.
And to do okay. what I can do, and that's what I'm supposed to do.
Okay. To do what's possible, to do what you can do. Okay, very. This is a very helpful way to deal with that. Anyone else now? We're not going to go around the room. Anybody want to just share where either you or someone in your group came forth with, and if you want to say the situation like this too, say, what's the situation I was in, here's how I felt, how I dealt with it, or whatever. Yeah.
We felt the feel many times too, in that what can we as one individual do in this big nation of ours? But then we all of us have written, our group had written with congressmen at various times.
Okay.
Sometimes you wonder if they're heard, but I've had replies from them. I think if you get a large enough group that writes on the subject, they will pay attention.
Okay. That's a piece of action, to do something. We have this great frustration. We did something. Furthermore, a bunch of us did something. Again, it's the group support, not only the group support in listening to each other's frustrations and providing support that way, but also taking some action. And I suppose Bread for the World is an example. Get together and write your political people and ask them to vote a certain way on a certain issue, and just say, this is the way we feel. Okay. Other examples? Yes. Uh-huh. Okay, thank you, Linda. So what you're saying is that the feelings of frustration are the same whether you're in a big city, small city, whether you're on one side or the other side of an issue, to kind of try to get together with people who are sharing frustrations, and then out of that, is that what you're saying, to come with some kinds of actions? Is this kind of what you're... Yeah, not alone, and then maybe we can move from it. Very good. All right, thank you. Yeah. Okay, the ripple effect. We have no way of knowing what magnificent, wonderful things will eventually happen from one little thing we do. Okay, others, yes.
If you do things.
Okay. You get to the situation where nobody seems to appreciate what I'm doing. How do I deal with that attitude? Begin to say, aha, why am I doing these things? What should I expect? And move on from there.
Love for that person, or to love.
Love. Right, love and prayer. You mentioned prayer over there. That's a powerful work. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I had a comment that I listened to the people in the group and wanted sort of the Christian bookstore and Heritage House and wanted to involve women's issues. And we had virtually everybody who talked about something who did something.
Okay.
And I just finished reading a book about China and the oppression in China. And we're living in a nation where, when there are injustices, but we can do something about it. You begin to speak out against injustice in China, and you're either dead or off in some village trying to survive, keep them starving to death.
Okay.
The thing that struck me is that we have the opportunity to bring about change in this country. We can even speak about it here.
Yeah.
In a meeting like this in China, we'd all be up in some kind of self-incrimination type thing.
Okay. Yes?
I've been frustrated to the point of not really even wanting to talk, because you are always hearing talk. And when I sit back and think, well, where does the power lie? If there's going to be a change, where does the power lie? And for me, it lies in the churches. And when we talk about our being Christians, all of the various denominations, that's where the power is. And for me, if the churches can't come together and create that change, then how can change possibly take place? I believe there's more power in the churches that they just sit on than exists with our politicians. So my solution, my personal solution, I opened a Christian bookstore in the neighborhood.
Okay.
I also opened a Black Heritage Gallery. Because in doing that, showing the children what our gifts are, gifts that God has given to us also as a people. And in the Heritage Gallery, I have literature written by Black writers, also art by Black artists. And it's to show them that we do grow up to be writers, we grow up to be artists, that we've made many contributions here in these United States, that we are educators. And just so that they can begin to recognize what their own potential is. Because as I find with a lot of children, Black children, they go into the world and they don't feel a part of it because they don't know what we, the contributions that we have made as a people. But then going back, change. How does one bring about change? I have to just find comfort. I have to make peace with myself. And I'm satisfied in just being able to do something. And I heard earlier this week, we have to begin to look at things as this is our gift from God. And so that which I do, which I feel is very, very minute, but this is my gift, and so and I continue on.
Okay.
And he's given me patience, so I'm very patient. Nothing has to happen overnight just for me to continue on.
Okay.
But once again, going back to the church, that's where the power lies, and only the churches can bring about the...
Okay.
And that's where I think we would all want to come from, that change that has to take place.
Okay, thank you. Yes, the churches. We do not want to lose hope in the church and to make the church something viable there. Yes, and you're reminding us again of the fact that the key word in this book is gift, that to say what are the gifts that God has given us, the gift of time, the gift of today, enjoy today, the gifts that we have to use, and the arts, like you're talking about, the arts, painting, literature, all of these ways that we can, and your utter frustration at just people talking. Yeah, that's a big one. Right, thank you. And that's the prayer not only as individuals, but as a group and watching for the results. Now, these other questions, again, I'm just going to let you challenge yourself with what are you doing this year. Choose one thing to live more justly. Maybe it's to go on a crusade against styrofoam cups or whatever. But if you were a poor in the third world, how would you interpret these Bible passages differently? I don't know if you want to read the gospel in Salentiname regarding Latin American liberation theology, the passages about discussion groups in base Christian communities. This particular text is in volume 4 up there in the bookstore, and the people say all kinds of interesting things about the parable of the sheep and the goats. One of the interesting things I ran across was one of the persons makes a comment, oh, those on Jesus' right, they would be on my left. And those on Jesus' left, they would be on the right. And things in regard to what you, this doling out charity to people, well, we'd have free clinics so that everybody would have good health. Well, lots of interesting ways that that these folks look at these passages, as well as Black liberation theology. You should read that and listen to people. I suppose the main thing is to listen to people like that and not say, I know how you feel, or I know what's best for you. We've got to get off that. And then finally, did anybody write a proverb?
Here's one that was not originated by me. I don't know who gets credit for it. It's I may not be able to change the world, but I'm not going to let the world change me.
Okay. I may not be able to change the world, but I'm not going to let the world change me. Yes, Ray.
If we're not willing to involve ourselves in the solution, we have really no right to pray for the solution to the problem.
Real loud and one more time.
If we're not willing to involve ourselves personally, actively in the solution of the problems of peace and justice, we have no right to pray for the solution.
Okay. Well, any others? Thank you. Yes. Okay, never underestimate the power of the individual, and change begins with me. Thank you, Gerda. Yes? Okay, there is a place for frustration, and knowing you feel frustrated, and knowing you feel angry, and a cry of absence is helpful for that. And remind me tomorrow to read as we begin. I didn't get a chance to read it this morning because we're out of time. The article about Koheleth in Peculiar Treasures by Frederick Buechner. And that'll be kind of a nice summary. Well, Saturday. We'll meet Saturday, and we'll talk about what's the use of all this learning and thinking and education and discussing and trying to figure things out, and, you know, what's the use of all that? It's not getting anywhere. So like the author of Ecclesiastes would say, today is a gift of God. Use it. Enjoy it. Have a nice day.